Hey, hello, welcome back to the Might Bomb Beekeeping Podcast. I'm Bruce Rodriguez, your host. Today is December 9th, 2019. It's freezing cold and raining out here. It was supposed to be 53 degrees. I was so excited. It was going to be warm. I was going to see my bees flying. But I conveniently ignored the little raindrops on the forecast, and it's been raining all day. All morning, all day, all night now. Didn't see one bee flying. And it definitely doesn't feel like it's 53 degrees today. But so today, I'm going to talk about some topics that were suggested to me by my friends at the Treatment Free Beekeeping group on Facebook. I put it up the other day and my people did not let me down. Gave me a lot of information, a lot of suggestions to talk about. I'm going to try to cover a few of them here today, and I'll save the rest for the next time, depending how many tangents I go on and how long I yak about certain things. So let's get this thing started. At the top, the very first one, first suggestion was by James Feeney. He says, I heard you were great with swarm trapping. We could always use some more insight there, especially in the more developed suburban areas. Looking forward to the podcast. Thanks, James. So about swarm trapping, the way I get a lot of swarms, and I do swarm trapping. I do set bait hives to catch swarms. And if I only did that, I would still have plenty of bees to mess with, but I really don't depend on swarm trapping alone. I mostly just call it swarm acquiring. And that the key to acquiring swarms and getting a bunch of swarm calls, and it's so easy and basically free, is to do the things that I've said a few times, and I say all the time to people at meetings that say there's no swarms in their area, or usually that means in their backyard. And that is to set up a free Facebook beekeeping type page where you have your number, you let everybody know that you're willing to remove swarms, share that around, get your friends to share it. That's one quick way to get plenty of calls in your area. To take it another step is to set up a website. You can set one up on WordPress, or that's the one that I use. It's the easiest for me because I'm not very tech savvy. Set up a WordPress site with a lot of your information on it too. Talk about bees. So when people do see a swarm and they search for swarm removal, your number should come up right after the paid advertisements by all the pesticide, pest controllers and everything. So you definitely want to do that. And if you pay a couple bucks for a domain, that helps you out a lot. And you can really get the swarms to come to you that way. You can print out business cards. I print out a stack of 500 business cards from whatever company. There's always a deal. I think it cost me 10 bucks for 500 of them. And I always have a stack in my car. And every time I stop at gas stations, I poke a bunch of them, punch them up onto a little cork board they have there by the bathrooms. And every time I go back into that one, they're all gone. So people are taking them, either somebody from the store is just throwing them in the trash. But I doubt that because there's a whole bunch of them up there. And I put them up on every gas station or anywhere where I see a cork board. And sometimes people call me, they'll say they saw that little business card on the cork board and took it. And then, that it just gets your info out there. There's also, you can also make a really fancy flyer if you want to. That's how I get a lot of calls. And the other thing is about making connections with people when you do get those swarm calls. You get a swarm in a neighborhood and you don't know where it came from. The thing is, when people live in a neighborhood with a whole bunch of other families around, they know if there's a beekeeper around there right down the road. So the fact that they didn't just say, hey, Joe down the road keeps bees, let's just call him up. The fact that they called you means that they probably don't know if there's any beekeepers around there in their own neighborhood. So that's a good thing to take them a little jar of honey with your phone number on it. That'll last in their cabinet for months if they see another one. And sometimes they'll take it and they don't even really eat honey, but it's still in their cabinet. And next spring when they see another one, they'll remember, oh man, hold on a second, I got that jar of honey that dude gave me. And they'll go find your number and call you again the next year. I have people repeat calls every year from people in the exact same area. And then their neighbors all come out, and every time they come out, you know, make a big spectacle of it. Sometimes the little kids come around, you'll hand them a drone or something and let them hold it and run around. You know, you got to be careful though. Don't give them the wrong bee. But I had a family that was real cool. Their kids were coming up and running around with drones in their hand and just make an impression on them. And after a couple years, you could pretty much just stop doing everything and you're still going to get calls. But I still do it. I still update my page. I'm going to always put the business cards up. And this past season, it got to the point where I was getting so many calls, I just couldn't handle them all. So I have my list of people that I call in order, depending on how much I like them or whatever, or how close they are, or what kind of beekeeper they are. And I just call them. And that's another way to get more swarms, is to know a bunch of beekeepers, because sometimes someone else will get a swarm call and they can't get it, or they're scared, or for whatever reason they can't get it, so they call you. And just take that one too. It's all free bees. As far as setting up the actual bait hives, I'm not gonna explain that again, because there's so much good information out there how to do it. Maybe I'll touch on this second a little bit here. I would say check out, you know, letembee.com is really good. There's some good swarm trapping YouTube episodes that you can watch. But what happens with me, every time I give a little presentation about bait hive setup and swarm trapping, is I tell people the very basic thing you need to do, which is just have a box. An older box is better. About 10 frame size will be good, or 8 frame, or you can use 2 nukes. That's a whole different tangent there, what size you can use. But you just need some old comb in there, or you have to coat it with some wax on the inside. And then where to put it. You just put it anywhere. Just get it out of your barn or out of your garage. Just equipment sitting in a garage closed up is doing no good for anybody. Get it all out there. It doesn't matter where you get it. Put up high, down low. You see people removing bees out of water meters in the ground all the time. It doesn't matter how high or low it is. Just get them out there. And don't put too many in one place. Like, don't put 5 in your yard, because now you're just splitting all the scouts up and they might never choose anything. I try to just keep 1 in each area. And the thing that always happens, though, is people take the info that I try to give them, that I just learned from other people, and they try to tweak it a little bit. So they'll say, yeah, I did everything you told me to do, but I also put some honey in there, or I put a feeder in there. And it's like, nobody told you to put a feeder in there. No one said put honey in there. So I'll try to say it one more time. Do not have any honey in your swarm traps. You may not even really attract robbers in the spring, because there's too much nectar out there. You're not going to have a robbing situation there. You're going to have ants is what you're going to have. Ants and maybe mice. So it's just going to mess up your whole thing. Don't have honey in there. Don't do any crazy extra stuff. Just put a box there, some comb, and a couple drops of lemongrass oil. You don't even really need that if you have good old comb and a good old box, but you can use that. There's plenty of, you can find out how to set that up. I don't want to keep repeating it, and when there's plenty of people who explain it way better than me. So that's real. Let me look at my question paper here again, make sure I didn't miss anything. Okay, yeah, he mentioned about developed suburban areas. And the thing is, it really, really doesn't matter what area. I get swarms in suburban areas, in the really deep city, like where there's nothing around but buildings and just run down houses and everything. Plenty of bees there. I get them in the country, in the forest. I can't say any area is better than any other by the number of swarms that I get. They're everywhere. And if there's no beekeepers around you, that's good, because now you have a really good chance of getting some bees that have been on their own for a while. And if there's a lot of beekeepers around you, that's also good, because you get a much higher chance of getting some bees, whether they're good or not. At least you're getting some bees. All right, so hopefully I explained that pretty well. The next question was from Scott Gorham, probably. He says, how about a general outline on transitioning from treating to treatment-free? He feels like he's going at it blind, except knowing that he needs to trap and split like a madman to make up losses. Okay, that's a tough one. I've never treated bees, so I don't know. It really doesn't matter if I've treated bees or not. There's no need to really, in my opinion, this whole podcast is my opinion. There might be some facts sprinkled in there, but there should be facts in there. I don't want to be spewing a bunch of unfactual information, but there's really no need to transition bees from anything. Treating isn't like some type of addictive drug that bees are addicted to and they need it and you need to wean them off of it. You have to just do what you should do is just decide you just don't want to treat anymore. And then know how to get free bees, which I just touched on. Know that bees are not in danger. There are plenty out there to be harvested from wherever. You don't have to pay for them. What I do is just get as many bees as I can, and I obviously don't treat them. I'll only feed in the fall if I absolutely have to. And then, man, I really just, it's a tough question, and I'm going at it kind of off the cuff here. Just keep the bees the way you normally would keep bees. Just, you have to just stop stressing about every little thing. And then when fall comes, and winter comes, you got to see who survives. And I was thinking about this the other day. It occurred to me why it annoys me going toe-to-toe with treaters when they're talking about survivor rates. And it occurred to me that treating beekeepers don't ever have more survivors than a non-treating beekeeper, because their bees are not surviving. They're not survivors. They are long-term patients, the way a doctor has patients. When bees such as mine or whoever's, when they come out of spring after going through the whole previous year never being treated and going through the winter on their own, they actually survived everything that was thrown at them. That's a surviving bunch of bees there. If your bees are, every single little obstacle they run into, you fix and treat with some type of whatever you put in there, some type of action or chemical or supplement. They're not survivor bees. They're your patients that you drag through a winter. If someone goes on a camping trip and they take a whole bunch of packaged food and their blow dryers and toasters and their stove, and they come back, you don't ask them, wow, how did you survive in the wilderness? They didn't survive. They just went on a slightly inconvenient vacation, okay? That's not surviving. Someone who gets lost at sea for a month with nothing and found alive and they went through a bunch of hell and maybe some other people on their ship didn't survive, that person's a survivor, whatever they had to do. Okay, you can't call them survivors, So it's hard for me to even get in a conversation about survivors with a treating beekeeper, okay? I know I went off on that one, but maybe I just can't really answer it, how to transition from treating to treatment-free. you have to just let go of your worries and your financial investment and stuff. I know that I spend zero money on bees. I spend zero on treatments, and I have 70-something colonies. So I don't know how much that's worth. What's a colony worth? $300 each or so? Several thousand dollars for nothing. I could lose them all, and I wouldn't have lost a penny. And I harvested a ton of honey, so that's beekeeping for me. Okay. Moving on. Mr. Tyler Richards, and I'm reading these, just I don't practice this or anything. Could you elaborate on the overall strategy and criteria of how being treatment-free can be evaluated? Oh man, this is going to be a tough one. What are the long-term and short-term goals for a treatment-free beekeeper, and what do you look for in your day-to-day operations, month-to-month, season-to-season, etc.? Okay, the overall strategy and criteria. I think I may have said most of that in the previous question. Catch a ton of bees. Really pay attention to which ones are doing really well. For me, I'm pretty much obsessed with my old queens, what would I call old, that are going into their third and possibly fourth winter right now. They're all marked different colors. They're all different colors, and they're fluorescent colors. I know exactly which one they are when I see them, and I make sure their dot is nice and clear. And also, I know every colony that is a daughter of those queens and every colony that's a granddaughter of those queens by the markings on their hive body. So I really like to keep track of which ones are just killing it with absolutely no help whatsoever except for a little bit of food. I'm not going to keep saying that over and over again. I do feed my bees pure sugar syrup only in the fall. So for me, my strategy is to definitely propagate those genetics. Also, if I catch swarms in areas where I do not know exactly where those bees came from, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt if I see them coming out of a tree, if I can find their colony right there within a couple steps. I'll let them slide, put them in a box and see what they have, you know. But if I find them in just random wide open place, I'm going to go ahead and use those bees to raise one of my own queen's daughters. So that's one thing that I do a lot of. That's my strategy, is to propagate only from my very oldest queens that are just doing great. And so far, last winter, I think it was 12 nukes that I sold off of one of my queens, all her daughters, and all of them lived except for one. And one of them was with an inexperienced beekeeper. It could have died from whatever, but for some reason it didn't live. But I think 11 out of 12, and none of them treat their bees, that's pretty good for the daughters of that queen. And I still have a few of hers and her granddaughter, so that one's killing it. And then the other ones, I sold a bunch of their daughters this past season, so we'll see how they do. Okay, it says, my long and short-term goals. I mean, my short-term goals, I guess when I'm just walking around the yard, I'm just making sure everybody's queen right, that they have enough room, but I'm not trying to have skyscrapers of honey, so I'm splitting pretty often. Those are my short-term goals. Just make sure everybody's queen right. Make sure there's no, you know, equipment breaking. I mean, I really don't stress about a lot of stuff. I'm not a commercial beekeeper. I'm not a migratory pollinator. I don't have any kind of goals in that direction. But my long-term goal is just to have, well, I like the way Jason Bruns mentioned on one of his website entries, where he likes to have an all-star team. And that's what I want, an all-star team. No matter how many colonies I have, if I have 30 or if I have 100, I really like the idea that I can walk straight up and down a line and say every single one of these colonies is just an all-star. Like, they all overwintered, none of them are treated, they're not showing any signs of anything. And that's what I like, and that's what I think I have this year going into winter. So there's really no problem there. And then it says, what do I look for in my day-to-day operations? Again, same thing. I go around just making sure no one's getting robbed. If they are, there's got to be a problem in there. But I haven't had any robbing this season at all. Just make sure everyone's looking good. That's pretty much it for that one. The next question, John Johnson asks, how do I handle AFB, American Foulbrood? And for that, I have never had American Foulbrood. I've been inspected a few times, and they've never told me I had any signs of it. I guess I could say, if I had American Foulbrood, that's definitely a tough one. That would be pretty tough. If they somehow said I had American Foulbrood in, let's say, my spool, original spool queen colony that I've had for, it's going in its fourth year now with the exact same queen, I'll be damned if I'm going to burn that queen up and all her bees. I would possibly shake them all off onto some clean, empty equipment, and I'd burn the equipment. That's not a problem. I don't care about that. Or maybe I could just pull the queen out. I really don't know if that would do it. I'm just definitely not killing that whole colony. There's nothing stopping, and then I'd have to think, where did I get it from? If I've never had it, where did it come from? Did it come from somewhere else? I wouldn't think I created it there on my own. It would have to have come from somewhere. And it's probably everywhere all the time anyway, the spores. So I'd have to look into that some more. I've never heard of it being in this area in the past 10 years that I've messed with bees. So, yeah, that's probably what I would do. I would just try to see if there's some way I can keep that genetic line of bees. And I don't care about the equipment. I'll burn it up if it makes everybody happy. Okay. So, Jeff Weselowski asks, his topic that he suggested was, how almost all university and expert research is a hindrance in the advancement of keeping treatment-free bees. Oh, God. Yeah, I heard it again the other day. I was listening to another podcast called Beekeeper Confidential, which I really like. That's another one that I like. And they had Samuel Ramsey on. And it's weird how, someone wears a lab coat and has their profile picture looking through a microscope. All of a sudden, people just fall at their feet when they talk to them. They never press them on anything. And he was talking about mites. And I'm sure being a PhD in entomology and everything, he surely has some type of cursory knowledge of how selection and evolution work. Yeah, and he even explained in detail about how mites evolve and how bees evolve, yet somehow at the end he still suggested that we keep our mite numbers low, just keep them low. And it was just like, oh my God, again, they all keep saying to all these experts, I don't think he even actually keeps bees. He talked about how he bought some bees for his dad as a birthday present. And that he's learning about all that. And he didn't know how much equipment costs. So he's definitely not a beekeeper. And I don't know why. I don't know what he has in the game that he has to keep pushing treatments on everything. He should just be honest and say, if you guys would all just knock it off. Just let the weak bees die and let us get past this thing. But no, he didn't do that. He again did the same thing all these other researchers do with their funny graphs and their strange statistics. They're just looking at it from an industry perspective, from a commercial beekeeping perspective, which that's fine. But just say that, don't tell hobbyists in the backyard that they have to be a little mini commercial operation. It does hinder a lot of things. And even the research that's going on right now, which I'm not going to mention again, is again going to be a big mess because I see people in all kinds of groups citing it already. It's not even over, and they're citing it really very much based on these dumb results. So, yeah, it's going to be a pain for a little while. Okay. Elizabeth Jones asks a very detailed, very long question, which I had to print on another page, so let me grab that one. Elizabeth Jones asks about treatment-free as a management style, how it is not necessarily hands-off, but includes multiple methodologies, kind of like beekeeping versus bee-having. Oh, and I love when people say that. That's just, you're a bee-haver, not a bee-haver. Like, okay, I don't even want to argue. It's like, okay, yeah, I'm a bee-haver. I have bees, you know. Okay, next, what's your next thing? So, the thing about the hands-off, I don't know who started that whole hands-off beekeeping. I mean, you can be hands-off, but sometimes people throw in do nothing as like a, as like an insult. You just do nothing. It's like, well, kind of, I don't really do nothing. I do things. I just don't do everything that you do because I just don't, I don't want to be your kind of beekeeper. So yeah, I wouldn't say that I do nothing. I do plenty of things. I wish I did nothing because I would have a lot more time from April to September. I'm running around like a chicken with my head cut off. So I'm kind of doing stuff. So that's kind of, it's lame. Don't even talk to people that try to do nothing attack on you. So the question goes on, splits for success. I mean, I do splits. When I was talking about what I call my prized most favorite queens, I try to split them ahead of them swarming, but it doesn't always work. I'll split them because, number one, I don't want them to have a brood break. If they would get a brood break in the wild, that's fine, but I'm trying to really test them, so some of them have never gotten a brood break, but a couple times, even if I split them, they'd still swarm anyway, so I would still catch them hanging on one of my little bushes or my plants there, and I see the mark, and I know which one it is, so I do split to try to make sure I don't lose those bees, those queens, actually, but I could never split, and I'd still catch so many swarms that I would have just slightly fewer colonies than I have right now. So you can split, or you can just keep catching swarms. Maybe you don't want to send swarms all into your neighbor's yards and everything, but luckily where I live, they don't care. They like it. They just call me right up. Hey, you got bees over here. Okay, I'll be right over. Maybe some other places, they're not going to be like that. And I can understand that. So yeah, split. Get your numbers up. And yeah, it gives you more chances, and it gets you to see how cool it is to raise new queens. I think raising new queens and just seeing the colors is something that always fascinates me. How one queen will be black, but her daughters will be black, and some will be light brown, and then the resulting workers, some of the colonies will be almost all black. They'll be almost every single bee in there is black, and then some will be mixed up. I think that's one of the coolest things. I'm watching the bees and just seeing how their colors kind of drift certain ways to dark and back to light. So I like doing that. Let's see. Disarming the angry neighbor who claims your bees are a nuisance. That's what she asks about. Again, I haven't had that where I live out in the sticks. They actually are constantly coming over asking me if I have honey, so that's pretty cool. If I had an angry neighbor, actually, you know what? I just lied. I did have somebody stop by last year to talk to, I think my mom's husband, I think, said something about there was a bunch of bees at in his barn or something like that, maybe working on his chicken feed. So that was the closest possible thing to a complaint. And they told him, okay, come back when Bruce is here. They never came back, so who knows what happened there. I'd probably just ignore them. If it's legal where you're at, just keep your bees. Tell them they're not your bees. You went overlooked at them. They're not the ones. All right. She also says talk about types of hive bodies. I'm not talking about that. There's plenty of that. Plenty. You can look up all different kind of hive bodies. I have mostly Langstroths. I have one long, like really thick Langstroth hive. I have a top bar, but I still haven't put bees in. I've had this thing now for 3 years. I've never put bees in the thing. I'm putting some bees in that thing next year just to see what happens. I had the spool, which isn't really a hive. It was just a thing that bees lived in. I love that thing. Okay, and then she goes on to talk about different breeds of honeybees. And that's a pet peeve of mine. You can understand a new beekeeper for thinking that there's Italian bees and Russian bees and Caucasian bees. And maybe there are. I don't know. I don't know where you're going to get a pure strain of any type of bee, especially with how many drones a queen mates with. And just if you look at any colony, all the bees are all different colors in there. I've had people tell me, oh, look, you got Russian bees there. It's like, really? I don't have any Russian bees here. I didn't buy bees from any Russian breeder. They're just black. Yeah, that's because they're Russian. No, they're not. They're definitely not. I've had that colony's great grandmother, and they were all different colors. So yeah, this weird idea that you can have Italians over here and some Russians on this side, and they just stay separate. It's understandable if you're new at it. So I'm not mad at you, but just really, you're not going to get a pure breed of anything. So please stop that. Okay, where to start if you're new to beekeeping, she says. Well, where to start? You can start by catching swarms. Start on Michael Bush's website. That's where I started at. I wish I just would have seen that article about catching swarms before I ordered my first package. I wish I could think back and say, you know what? I've been keeping bees for this long, and I have never, ever bought any bees. But I have that one little blemish in my whole ownership of bees when I bought that one stupid package that was dead within 3 months anyway. But I'll get over it someday. So I would definitely start by setting up swarm traps. Get your name out there. Don't worry about screwing up getting swarms and making a fool out of yourself. I do it all the time. I'll always do that. Just go get them bees. Put them in whatever kind of equipment you want to. Don't spend a ton of money on junk. Just get tops, bottoms, boxes, and some frames. And you'll learn. You'll learn that you should have your frames together. You'll learn you should use smoke and not sugar syrup spraying it on your bees. You'll learn all that stuff. Just don't think that you have to know it all when you first start. I sure didn't, and I don't even know half of anything right now. Okay, how I came to TF beekeeping. And I think that's what she asked. I think I explained that when I was on Solomon Parker's Treatment Free Beekeeping podcast. The first couple seasons that I had bees, I didn't know that there was a thing called treating. I didn't know it because the only books that I read were very old books from the 60s and 50s and even older than that. I had no idea about mites. I didn't get any of the beekeeping magazines. Facebook wasn't around really. There was nothing. There was maybe one or two bee channels on YouTube, which was brand new at the time. It sounds funny now thinking back. I just didn't even know about it until I had bees for a couple seasons. And then when I found out about it, I just thought, nah, I'm just not going to do that because I have a background in biology and I know about how selection works. And I figured this is just another thing that they can move past. Because the old books, all they talked about was tracheal mites and wax moths, believe it or not. Believe it or not, back a long time ago, those were a big deal, the wax moths. They would knock out a fully functional, booming hive, I guess, colony. And that was the thing that I was worried about when I had bees. So when I mentioned it to these new experts that I thought they were at the time, they said, oh, no, nobody worries about that anymore. Now this is the thing that we're worried about. It's these mites. And I was like, whoa, wait, you don't worry about those other things anymore? Yeah, the bees, they're fine with those. I'm like, oh, okay, then I'm going to see if they can be fine with those too that you're telling me to worry about. And in my experience, they are fine with them. The weak ones die, and the good ones are not dying. And they're doing great for me and everyone who gets them from me. So that's how I kind of, and then it was only later that I discovered Michael Bush's website. And then when I read that, I was just like, wow, this is, it's such a good book. Even, I mean, well, it was a website when I read it. I did eventually get the hard copies, but I just thought, wow, I can't believe it. I'm already doing this same thing he's talking about. But I did learn from his book about small cells and about foundationless. It's funny to think, wow, I didn't think bees can make comb without foundation. It's so dumb. Yeah, they can make it perfectly fine without foundation. So I learned everything, pretty much everything from there. And then everything after that, I just learned by screwing up and then by trying to not screw up. All right, what's the next question here? Okay. The next one was by, I'm not exactly how to say the name. It's spelled O-G-N-E-N. I'm going to say Ognin, or it could be Onan Dzilevsky. And he asked me a question that I did mention in my last recording. He says, Bruce, you open feed sugar, if I'm not mistaken. Could you address that inconsistency, in his opinion, with the do-nothing treatment-free approach and how you justify it? And like I said to him in the, him or her, I don't even know if it's a man or a lady, I can't, I apologize for that, because I can't see the picture. I'm blind, pretty much, not blind, but very bad vision on this paper. I feed in the fall because in my area, it's fantastic in the spring and summer. Everything's blooming. You just can't mess up in the spring and summer in my place. You could throw a hive off the roof, and it'll land in two perfect nukes, you know, set up. That's how, you just can't mess up these bees. So I never have to feed. I can just split, and almost every queen comes back every time, perfect. I mean, almost every time. But right around August, it just goes from 100 to 0 really fast. And if I didn't feed there, with the number of colonies that I have, they would all be dead. They'd just dry right up, and they definitely wouldn't get through December. Maybe if I only kept 2 or 3, I might be okay. But I like to have more than 2 or 3, so for that reason, I do feed in the fall. And how I justify it, which I don't think it really needs to be justified, but again, it's not a do-nothing approach, like I said a little earlier. When we talk about treating and treatment-free, we're almost 100% of the time talking about mites all the time. At least that's what treaters are talking about, mites. So I'm a mite treatment-free beekeeper, and sugar in no way deals with mites in any way. I mean, that I'm aware of, unless somebody wants to point it out. Then you might say the pH makes them more susceptible to mites. Okay, good. That's good then, because I want them to be more susceptible. Because if they're surviving fine with sugar that's making them more susceptible, imagine how they'd do if I was just a regular sane person with 1 or 2 hives. Okay, so you might say it's actually more aggressive than being treatment-free because I'm feeding them something that a person might say is bad for them. But it's definitely not, doesn't help with mites. So that's how I would justify it, I guess. And my bees are doing great. And I'm going to continue to do it unless I find, you know, I know if I live somewhere else, maybe I'll see how that works. Okay, I think I tackled quite a few questions. I have a few more that I'll take care of in the next one. I don't want to make these recordings too long. I don't want to tire everybody out. But thanks for joining me, and I'll talk to you later. Take care.